Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Joyce Barry and Friends, the number one worldwide radio show. The show's outrageous and it's contagious. It will lift your spirits high, you'll feel that you can fly. Transform your attitude, fill it with gratitude. Cut loose and improvise, it's coaching time today. Joyce is a great coach with an extraordinary approach. Fast on the upbeat, top of the heap. A wild motivator, great stimulator. Unstoppable in a humoristic way. Life lessons with passion, joyfully today. You want Joyce as your coach if you want this to be your best year ever.
Coach Joyce here. I want this to be my best year ever. I want this to be your best year ever. I want this to be the best year ever for all our friends, our family, and our loyal listeners worldwide. And get ready for a great show today. Technical difficulties. Folks, I am really honored and humbled to say that we have with us today Rabbi Eric Greenberg and Father Brian McWeeny. They talk about the significance of Passover, Good Friday, and Easter. Hear about the connectivity of these highly significant holidays and also how they differ. This highly informative show promises to be interesting and entertaining. I just want to make special note here that this is the most significant time for the Rabbi and Father Brian, and they broke time away from their extraordinary busy schedule to be with us. So as I said, I'm very honored and humbled. Let me bring on Father Brian first. He is the Director of Ecumenical Affairs and Interreligious Activities for the Archdiocese of New York. How grateful I am, Father Brian, that every year you join us on these most, most significant days. Welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be with you, Joyce, and with Rabbi, my dear friend, because this is a very sacred time of the year for the three major faiths. We'll soon be in the period of Ramadan after Easter, but it's very close. Because this is a time of year in which we're talking about growth and new hopes and things like this when we see the flowers budding for the first time this year.
I just want to share now who Rabbi Eric Greenberg is. And believe me, I could go on and on about both these extraordinary men of faith. But just a brief note, he is a leading interfaith expert, communications and program director, and an international award-winning reporter. He's had meetings with three Roman Catholic popes. So I love that they're interfaith. I love that they're friends, brothers in faith. So, Rabbi Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, and it's a real privilege to be with you, Brian, as well. Today is Good Friday. We're preparing tonight as the first Seder of Passover, and here we get to talk a little bit and exchange views and the closeness of our two faiths.
Well, I think the first miracle of these holidays that I have both of you here. I consider it a major blessing and a miracle. Father Brian, why don't you start off wherever you wish?
Well, when we were talking before, you asked me to make some reference to the terrible tragedy in Paris of the partial loss of Notre Dame, Cathedral de Paris. And certainly it has touched everyone when we look at an edifice that has seen so much history, both religiously and in the civil forum. I think of the beautiful cathedral built 400 years before Columbus even discovered America. That is so significant. But one of the things that has come out of it, and I'm sure Eric has heard about it as well, we had yesterday, under the leadership of Cardinal Dolan, Mr. Ken Langone, former founder of Home Depot, and Rabbi Joe Potasnik, a great interreligious and philanthropic meeting, which began a program called From St. Patrick's to Notre Dame, where we are gaining funds for the rebuilding of the beautiful cathedral. One of the things that people are unaware of, they know that the French government supports the church, and they were under the mistaken impression that the government was going to pay for the rebuilding of the cathedral, but it is not. It's certainly supporting it in many, many different ways, and financially as well. But certainly, most of the money must come from private sources. And so we've had some interesting gifts from sheikhs in the Middle East, and we've had the Jewish community coming forth. Rabbi Schneier was with us yesterday, and on behalf of his congregation, gave us $10,000 before for the beautiful rebuilding. And
Rabbi Arthur Schneier?
Yes.
Terrific.
Yes.
Wow, great.
And Mr. Langone himself has given $100,000 towards the effort. So, but what is required, I think, more is for each person of faith to think about what Notre Dame means in terms of religion, but also in terms of culture. You know, what happened? Broadway began at Notre Dame. And what I mean by that is, Joyce, is in the early history of the church, like around the year 1000 or 1100, people did not have literacy. They did not. So how do you get the scriptures over to them? How do you get the stories over to them? And they used to have what we call morality plays in front of Notre Dame. And there would be plays, and that would be, you know, very much a part of the scene today of entertainment. But it was part of trying to give the people values through the arts. And that's what the Basilica has always been about in terms of the beautiful stained glass windows, in terms of the statuary, in terms of the various aspects. And, of course, architecturally, it's a masterpiece that was very, very different than any construction that went before it. So it's a wonderful sign that in this destruction, New York, as well as other places throughout the world, are coming together to support this beautiful work of man. But like all works of men, Eric, right?
Yeah.
They soon disappear, and we have to always look for the eternal verities. What is the foundation of our humanity?
Right.
And for us, the answer is easy: God and His creation.
Yeah, you know, on
I
that...
I heard that within a day, over $1 billion was pledged, over $1 billion within
yes.
a day.
Yeah,
and it's going to be very expensive.
What struck me, I just want to say one thing, what struck me was the timing of when it happened, Holy Week, when it happened. Any comment about that?
Yes, well, certainly, when we look at like... For example, today, Good Friday, we commemorate the death of the Lord. When you look at the destruction of a life and realize that in the Christian faith, we feel that that death caused eternity to be open to all humankind. The fact of the matter is, we experience on Palm Sunday and the day following this great destruction. And yet, we, as you mentioned, people are coming forward in the desire to raise up again Notre Dame.
Yeah, yeah. You know, when you say it's so moving what we're talking about, and as you say, around the world, there has been such a massive response and sympathies and but also action. So my friend, I mean, to me, one of the most evoking responses has been the chief rabbi of Poland. Right, the fact that there is a chief rabbi in Poland is after the Holocaust is such a it's a miracle itself. And this week, a friend of mine, Rabbi Shudrick, and sent a letter to the Polish episcopate, and I just want to take a second to read it. It's just the idea that all of the synagogues in Warsaw basically were burned down, except for one. And so it's a community that has seen such suffering. And he writes, we, the rabbis, the Union of Polish Rabbis, are brokenhearted and grieved by the burning of Notre Dame in Paris. We are grieved that a place of worship for so many centuries, for so many people, has been so badly damaged. We as Jews know what it means to see your house of worship burning. We still fast every year on the anniversary of the burning of the temple in Jerusalem 2,000 years ago, which of course relates to both both our religions.
Right.
We here in Poland also remember the burning and destructions of our synagogue during World War II. These experiences have made us very sensitive and aware of the pain and horror of the destruction of any house of worship. We lack words to express our grief and strong sense of solidarity. And in response to that, I should share with you that Archbishop, and I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Gadecki, G-A-D-E-C-K-I, the head of the Polish Roman Catholic Episcopate, called Rabbi Shudrick and thanked him for his letter and his support. That, to me, is what where we are today in our interfaith relations.
We have come a long way, but we still, as you realize, Eric, and we both think, we have a long way to go, too.
Yes, sir. Indeed.
But what I was saying was I found it so highly significant of a whole year that it happened during Holy Week.
Yeah.
I really felt that it was, there was a message in that we have to be on our toes all times, and how many tragedies occurred when people deliberately used holiday time to have massacres occur and all of that because they're figuring people would be off guard. So that's what it kind of reminded me of. I know it wasn't terrorism, but it did remind me of that.
But you raise a point that I want to double up on. This was an accident. Unfortunately, these accidents happen a lot with reconstruction, because reconstruction had begun on a section of Notre Dame. And they feel it was because in that area where the reconstruction was being done, that's where the fire broke out. We think of our beloved in New York Central Synagogue.
Yes, I was just about to.
And we almost lost that completely because they were doing renovations.
And Brian, that was right at the high holidays, if you remember.
Yes. And our wonderful rabbi was there yesterday from Central Synagogue, and Rabbi Bechtol.
Yes.
And she also gave a beautiful gift on behalf of Central, because she reminded us that the first one there at the fire was the cardinal.
Yes. Yes. And offered space for because it was right before the high holidays, Rosh Hashanah.
Exactly.
I was a reporter back then, and I actually got one of the first people to tour the inside of the damaged synagogue. This is a major synagogue in New York City, and it was heartbreaking, especially as you say, Joyce, timing. So right away, the cardinal stepped up and said, "We're going to try to find a space for you, for you know, hundreds of Jews to pray during the Jewish New Year, Rosh Hashanah, and Yom Kippur." And it turned out, I think, in the end, that the city let the synagogue use the armory, the big armory on.
Up in the 60s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that was transformed into a makeshift synagogue, which then harkens back, of course, to you know the Israelites in the wilderness. So,
right.
Some things repeat, but yeah.
But Rabbi Angela also reminded us that there's a fire in a mosque in the 50s up in the streets, the East Side 50s, and. They have just had two or three services, Muslim services, in the beautiful undercroft of Central Synagogue. They opened up their home to the Muslim community. So these tragedies, if there's any silver lining to them, is that the religious community as a whole has stood up and said, we will care for one another, we will make sure that each of us has a proper place to worship.
Beautiful, yes. And as you say, we have a lot more to go, but we're certainly, I think it was Cardinal Casper said, we're in the beginning of the beginning.
Yes, yes. Which brings us to not only Holy Week, but also the beautiful time of Passover, which has great meaning to us too, because we think over in our tradition of the Passover from death to life. We're thinking of the great liberation of Moses, bringing his people out of the slavery of Egypt to the promised land. And that's celebrated tonight. I am going to enjoy a Passover celebration, but it's going to cause great sacrifice. Because it's going to be held at the Lincoln Square Steakhouse. Now, I do like my steak, Eric.
Yeah.
It is Good Friday, so that means I'll be gifted with some probably salmon.
Salmon, yeah.
I'm not really a fish person, but it is what I would not dream of missing this.
The safe, healthy choice is the salmon, but yeah. Which brings up what I would call a halachic, religious, legal question. If you can't eat meat on Friday, is it just Good Friday, or is it every Friday at this point?
Well, it reads is there's a couple of different realities. The reality is we should still not be eating meat on Friday. However, if we wish to dispense ourselves from that so we could eat meat,
yeah,
we can do a work of charity or do some extra spiritual prayer or something like that. So in other words, we can substitute for it. On Good Friday, there is no substitute.
Uh-huh. And what time, and is the in terms of timing, so you're saying it's Friday, but it's actually Friday night. If at midnight, would you be able to eat that steak?
At
12:01?
Yes, at midnight.
So
if
why
I was awake.
So here's my suggestion. My suggestion is you order, you have the salmon at the meal, but also order the steak. And at 12:01, take a couple of bites.
Well, let me tell you a story that I will always appreciate about my mom and dad.
Yeah.
We would go shopping in the Grand Union, and my mother would be buying, you know, for the week. But she also bought a lot of cold cuts. She would potato chips and soda. And we knew that we would never see that because at midnight they would stay up as a couple, my mom and dad,
yeah,
and spend time together alone. And then they would eat after midnight. They would have a sandwich or something like that. And that was their special time. And I think because they did that, it made us a stronger family.
Yeah.
Because they had their very, very special time where they were not worrying about the three of us kids.
Yeah.
But this was their moment.
And that's a beautiful story, and that raises how special these holidays are and the traditions that we hand down from generation to generation. I'm right here in the thick of boxes of my mother's Passover dishes.
Right.
Which I inherited, and she inherited it from her mother. So a lot of these dishes, and Joyce, you'd love this because they're sort of this green ceramic cups and plates. I don't see anything like it today. And I preserve them. I put them in a box, and every year I go down and bring them back up into the house and clean them off. And this is now, I don't know, 70 years of the same Passover dishes that, you know, I will pass down to the next generation. And it's just a wonderful, you know, besides the religious aspects of what we do, but there's also the, maybe, as you said before, Brian, the cultural, the family values that we pass down of what,
right,
of what we've been doing in our own families and the customs. It's just a really wonderful thing to do.
And we can see that even in the playing out of the Seder meal, you know, how important tradition is and making sure that we remember. I think that's an aspect in all of our religious traditions, the idea of remembrance.
Oh, absolutely. In the Haggadah, the book that basically we read from and direct our evening of instructions of how to do the Passover Seder, we are commanded to, God says, you shall teach your children about these things, about that you, and it's not just remembering, Brian, but also we sit around the Seder table and we're supposed to feel like God is bringing us out of slavery as well.
Yes. Yes.
So it's a personal experience, and you know, as you know, how important that is to feel it for yourself. The actual, it's not just sort of studying a book, but it's actually feeling like you were there and you were in Egypt, and God is bringing you out and trying to experience it yourself.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I especially love the connectivity, interfaith connectivity. I always appreciate that. Cardinal Dolan was on a few talk shows this week, and I was listening to him intently. He's such a great speaker. And the thought that came to mind is I just wish more people of one religion would listen to and appreciate people from the other religion, because they have so much to offer. We have so much to offer each other. So that's why I love that you're both so connected to interfaith endeavors.
Right, and that's the important thing. It's we pray together, thanks be to God. We talk together, thanks be to God. But we also act together, and that's
yep.
the most important. Both Eric and I work with different organizations who are concerned about a religion in the Middle East and how there are some of our brothers and sisters who are not free to experience their religious life. They all dealt with ISIS and so many other terrorists, you know, seeking to obliterate, as if they could, the Christian or Jewish or even Muslim traditions.
Yeah, you know, one of the most moving, absolutely, one of the most moving moments of, I think, the last couple of years, Brian, you'll remember that when there was a terrible tragedy involving in a Coptic church, when the terrorist came in and killed Coptics while they were praying, and I think it was
That's right.
Christmas or Christmas Eve, and the Cardinal and Rabbi Potasnik led a delegation to
the consulate.
the consulate, the Egyptian consulate. And what a powerful moment when it's captured in this wonderful photo that we're all in, standing there together, Coptics and Catholics and Jews and Muslims. And it's just what an amazing picture of how we can and should and need to stand together against these forces that are misusing and abusing religion for their own terrorist intent.
Yes, and that's why, you know, again, as Joyce says, this part of the year is so important in our own communities as well, to make sure that we realize and embrace the values of our parents and grandparents and for generations, because they are traditions of good cooperation with one another and love for one another. The Catholics, we don't have a Seder, but we do have Easter dinner and things like that and Christmas dinners. And I always remember my favorite was coming home from the seminary, because the seminary, you know, you're leaving that all-male environment and everything to go back to family.
Yeah.
And we never knew in my house who was going to be at the dinner table. My mother would bring over the organist, who had nobody else, who was an old person. She was old, but she probably was only about 50. But when we were kids, we thought 50 was old. And then Mr. and Mrs. Lappin would come in. He ran the candy store, and his son Ira was my good friend, and there was a daughter. There was two children, and they would come in for Easter dinner with us and everything like that. And so when people say, when did you begin your interreligious interest, I have to say it was begun for me by my mom and dad.
Oh, that's wonderful. You know, now, where was this? Was this in the Bronx? Or
this was in Inwood.
In Inwood, wow, okay.
Yeah, you were either Irish or Jewish.
Yeah, yeah.
There was nobody in between.
Yeah.
And in fact, my nickname was Rabbi, because my Jewish friends didn't know what a seminarian was.
Oh.
So they used to call me the Rabbi.
Rabbi, that's right. So it's similarly with me. That's very interesting. So in Brooklyn, my next-door neighbors were the Porzios, this a good Italian Catholic family, and Lucy, who was our next-door neighbor, her sister was a nun. So
yeah.
She would frequently come by, and I would sit. I would be a little kid like you were. And, you know, she would tell stories and talk to us about, and I was fascinated. And, you know, this was right about the time, so I was going to a yeshiva, but she would, you know, talk about, well, you know, Jesus was a rabbi, and she would share, you know, that sort of relation kind of view that would be more acceptable to me, that I would understand.
Yeah.
And that's where she taught, you know, me about interfaith relations. She wasn't scared of being, you know, talking about her Catholicism with a young Jewish boy.
Yeah.
And she taught me that I shouldn't be scared about talking about my Jewish stuff with a nun.
Well, my dad was a Bond Bread salesman. He sold Bond Bread.
Uh-huh.
And Mr. Lappin used to own a grocery store in Brooklyn. And my father used to serve that store. And so we knew all the Jewish holidays as kids, because my father worked on a commission.
Ah.
So if it was going to be Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur, it was not going to be a good week. The stores would be closed.
That's funny. That is funny. I'd like you both to take a couple of minutes. It's very interesting, your stories and what's going on now. But for our listeners around the world, a little bit about the significance of Passover, Good Friday, and Easter, how they're the same and how they differ, how they connect to one another.
Well, I think they certainly connect in terms of our understanding of the Book of Exodus and Deuteronomy. We try to maintain a unity in terms of date with Passover and with Easter. Please don't ask me to explain how that's done, because I just look at the calendar to find out when Easter is. But there is a relationship there. And of course, as I've said to many of my Jewish brothers and sisters, when we offer the holy sacrifice of the Mass, two of the prayers are taken from the Seder. We have a blessing of the bread and a blessing of the wine. And that is directly at our Mass, an homage, if you would say, to our Jewish roots.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here's that's... You know, I'm not, if you're not going to try to explain the dating, I'm not going to either. But it's because it is dealing with the lunar calendar and the solar calendar, and at some point the church decided to make the Easter on a Sunday. And I'm just trying to think if set Sunday as the day of Easter rather than you know, moving it along with the lunar calendar, which would be obviously different. But it's a whole complicated calendar equation, and I think it's after the first full moon at the end of March is when Easter occurs. So it could be as early as March 22nd or as late as April 25th. I think. Do I have that right?
Yes,
Father.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So you have a wide range of when Easter can be, but it has to be on a Sunday, as opposed to Passover, which is done according to the lunar calendar, and so can be, you know, on start on any day of the week. And so this year it happens to be on a the Hebrew day of the 14th of Nisan, and Nisan happens to be on a Friday.
Right.
Which complicates things for Jews, because then Friday night also starts the Sabbath. So it's sort of a double religious experience for Jews this year, because it's both Passover and the Sabbath.
That's what we run into.
What it did also, and the date of the celebration of Passover is not the same every year, because the date depends on the moon's multiple phases. That's what I found out.
Right, yes.
Well, no, it's the same. It's the same. The date is the 14th of Nisan, the Hebrew. That's the Hebrew date. But but that moves around because it's according to a lunar calendar. So the day of the week.
Right. That's why it's complicated.
Yeah, that's why it's complicated. But you know, more important than that, I mean, as Father Brian was saying, if you remember, I mean, here's why. How is it connected? It's connected at the hip, so to speak, because here is Jesus, a Jew. With all his apostles, who are Jews, coming into Jerusalem, why is he there? Well, he's there, I believe, to celebrate the Passover.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
So it's you know, there's that connection. He's there for the Passover, which was one of the three pilgrimage festivals that the ancient Jewish community would celebrate. They would come to Jerusalem, and, you know, in those days there were sacrifices, and they would sacrifice the animals. And by the way, sacrificing is misunderstood a lot. That would be the meal. So they would eat it. It wouldn't be just like it was sacrificing it and just for, you know, for no, there would be no benefit for anyone. But then here is he, and he's welcomed into Jerusalem by supporters, Jews, of course, who are waving palm fronds, right? Palm leaves?
Right, yes.
And that was last Sunday. And the connection then of palm leaves, Jews to this day also use palm leaves on the holiday of Sukkot.
Yes.
As part of the ritual. So there's so many intertwined, you know, it's really a strong connection between these two the holidays. And I was going to ask the Father about, so Good Friday, of course, I never quite was comfortable in saying, like, happy Good Friday. How do you give a salutation on Good Friday? What does one wish a Catholic on a day like today?
Well, I don't think you do that for Yom Kippur either. Right?
Correct.
And so it would be similar to that.
Yeah, yeah.
However, in our theology, we say Felix Kupa, happy fault. And what that meant was that if Adam had not failed in preserving God's presence, Jesus would never have had to come.
Right.
And so it's a happy fault that we are in the presence of a God-made man. Of course, that's real Christian theology.
Right.
Which, you know, our brothers and sisters share in to a degree, but not entirely. For example, the Muslims look upon Jesus as a great prophet, but not the greatest prophet.
Right, 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 right. But here, I mean, it fascinatingly, so Jesus comes in, and of course the story is riding on a donkey, correct?
Yes.
Being welcomed by this throng of supporters and people who want to see him, and he's got quite a reputation going around preaching around the region, I believe. And it's just, you know, and it's all at that time a Jewish event.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we look at that, Christians look at that wonderful celebration on Palm Sunday as sort of a fulfillment of the prophets of Isaiah and Jeremiah. So again, that Christian-Jewish link.
Right, right. The biblical prophets. Yeah.
Yeah.
So in terms of the Seder, so I know scholars, you know, have disagreed over the centuries over what the Last Supper, what kind of meal that was. The last sort of scholarly reviews papers I've read, you know, fairly recently, it seems like, and I think John, in the Book of John, Gospel of John. It's not actually the Passover meal. It's sort of the eve of Passover. Is there any what's your thinking on that, or how should we understand that?
I would think that both interpretations have their supporters within the church as well.
Yeah.
John's gospel is very different. In the other three gospels, as you know, Eric, they talk about the institution of the Eucharist. This is my body, this is my blood.
Right.
But in John, John focuses on what the Christian must be about when he washes the feet of the disciples. And that, of course, is a ceremony that we had last night with Cardinal Dolan when he washed the feet of six women and one man. And then Jesus was reminding his disciples, as I have done for you, so you must do for one another.
Right.
In other words, the charity that I wish to share with you must be shared. If you're going to be an authentic disciple, must be shared with all those you meet.
Beautiful.
I just want to say it was funny that you brought up about the salutation on Good Friday, because we discussed it, my friends and I, just this week. You don't say to someone, happy Good Friday. It's happy Easter. So for Good Friday, I would usually say blessings, but there's no particular salutation. Is that right? Just like we don't say happy Yom Kippur, we say happy New Year.
Right.
Right, we say Happy New Year on the Jewish New Year, on Rosh Hashanah, but on Yom Kippur, what Jews traditionally say is, may you be inscribed in the Book of Life.
Ah, yeah. That's nice.
So, you know, because theologically and traditionally, it's God is judging us on this day. And, you know, we're in the synagogue praying for most of the day and fasting. And so the hope is that we will be written and sealed into the Book of Life.
You handle the connectivity of the holidays very well. What would you say is the major difference, the major distinction between the holidays of the different faiths?
Well, I think for both of us, the major difference is we're celebrating the resurrection of Christ, and that is uniquely a Christian doctrine. But in every other way, we're celebrating together because, as I said before, we remember that the powerful liberation of the Jewish community from the Pharaoh to the freedom of the Promised Land in fulfillment, basically, of the prophecy given to Abraham. But with us as Christians, we focus more on that translation from death to life.
Right. Right, and you know, as I brought up before, also, you know, it's more for Jews. It's a commemoration, a remembrance, a celebration, a feast, but also the added, a very important part of that, you are required to believe that you were also brought out. You,
yes.
This soul in 2019, were also in Egypt, and also brought out. And, you know, the great thing about a Seder is that the Seder throughout the centuries is a fluid kind of feast, a fluid kind of ritual or set of rituals. And it's, things have been added on over the years, you know, by either, we call them either more liberal or progressive or, you know, different communities to add, say, an item to the Seder table, to the Seder plate, in order to bring up something that's happening in our day. So this morning I was reading something very interesting. Do you all know about the orange that does some communities put an orange on their Seder plate now, which is a very new kind of thinking. Is anybody familiar with that?
No, what would be the
symbol? No, I haven't heard that.
So the orange, so it's actually, so the late great Jewish theologian, Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel, I used to go to there. He had passed away years back, but I was friendly with his wife and daughter. So I used to go to their Seder. And the daughter, Susanna, Professor Susanna Heschel at Dartmouth, who's a brilliant scholar, instituted or recommended that for inclusion of women, she was getting fed up of the idea of women being excluded from some of the rituals. So the idea that women are also, not only did they traditionally make all the food, right, and prepare everything, but they need to be also, their voice needs to be heard as well. So there's two fairly new rituals of putting an orange for inclusion that everyone, all Jews of all stripes and backgrounds need to be heard and understood and welcomed to the Seder table. So that's basically the orange. And then there's a cup of Miriam. The cup of Elijah is a traditional cup. A cup is filled of wine and put in the middle of the table as a invitation for Elijah to come. And Elijah, of course, is the in Jewish history and theology, is the messenger for the Messiah. So by having that cup, that's another sort of point of connection, Brian, that
yes.
We're waiting for the, as the old joke goes, you know, we're waiting for the Messiah. Is this his first or second time?
And we leave the
yeah,
door
yeah.
open during the Seder for Elijah. We leave the door open.
Well, in some neighborhoods, yes.
In other neighborhoods,
in other neighborhoods you might not want to do that. But
yeah, good point.
But so there's a cup
I
of Elijah, but now there's a cup of that many people or some people do, a cup for Miriam. Miriam, of course, being the sister of Moses and Aaron, who is equally instrumental in the Exodus story. And there are those who say, well, she needs to be represented as well. So all to say that I love the idea that the Seder not only sticks to tradition, but also is flexible enough to include new kind of thinking and new ideas.
And folks, now would be a moment that I want to share with you that we want to represent our other shows as well and let you know that every day we bring you the best topics, the best guests for you to make a difference, have a difference in your life, gain some understanding, and hear in the very wise words of our official health guru is why you should be listening.
Listen to me. I have something to say about a wonderful way to start your day, a way to stimulate your mind and increase your energy, make you feel so good. And guess what? It's free. Weekdays at 11 a.m. Eastern, hear the Joyce, Barry, and Friends show. You'll find it on the internet, on Blog Talk Radio. This show is upbeat and fun and very inspirational. It's informative, educational, and very motivational. There's the Coach's Corner, great quotes and news. There are suggestions, perspectives, and advice you can use to enhance your life and improve your health, plus clever, simple ways to increase your wealth. Joyce's perceptions and personality will keep you captivated, and her guests from many walks of life will always keep you fascinated. When Joyce and her friends speak, it's like you're in the conversation. This is part of what makes her show so unique, really a sensation. For Joyce's friends are not only the guests you're listening to, they're everyone who is tuning in. Yes, I do mean you. So refer your friends and family. They'll be so pleased to know. And let's make Joyce, Barry, and Friends the number one internet radio show.
And folks, we do ask that you partner up with us in having that happen. Simply go to Joyce Barry, Barrie, and friends.com. And on the home page on the upper left is my picture, and right under that you click on follow, and you will be apprised of every show, every guest, every topic. You need not miss any show, because when you can't be with us at 11 Eastern, know that we have over 8 years of our shows archived. We've never taken out a show. So simply by going to the archives, you can click on them. Their last date on top, just go down, see what you resonate with, click on it. You can download it. You could share it. You could let other people know. And the best part of the homepage on the upper right is the search bar. So if you type in Father Brian, B-R-I-A-N, McWeeny, M-C-W-E-E-N-E-Y, all of Father Brian's show will come up. If you type in Rabbi Eric, E-R-I-C, Greenberg, G-R-E-E-N-B-E-R-G, all Rabbi Eric's shows will come up. You simply know that they're a click away. Also, you can search by topic. If you put in Passover, all our Passover shows will come up, Easter, Good Friday. So there are two ways you can search, by the guest or by the topic. So please do that. And while you're at it, do follow me on Facebook and Twitter, Joyce Barry, Barrie. All our shows are posted on Facebook and Twitter as well as another way for people to know about us. So absolutely become a follower. We very much value our listeners and the thousands of people that choose to follow us so they don't want to miss any show. Okay, back to you, Rabbi Eric. Let me go to you. You specifically asked to connect with Father Brian. Why was that important to you?
Well, for the real reason is because Brian seems to have a connection to the steakhouse. And I thought that maybe I can wangle an invitation. And if he can't eat, and even a better reason, he can't eat the steak, so I can actually then have you know, a double portion, which anyway, all right.
I asked you that question because so many people have such high regard for Father Brian. I wanted you to represent them and say why you do.
Well, absolutely. So I have, in my years of working, you know, in the interfaith world, it's a rare opportunity to partner with the Father Brian, who is savvy, smart, funny. Knows his stuff. He's been around a block or two, but also so dedicated to this work. And you know, we're living in a time now that it's almost overwhelming. I mean, we talked about Notre Dame, which of course was an accident, but the incidents around the world, humanity, it seems, democracy, the things, religious freedom, we're all kind of under attack to a certain extent. And I always look for people who I know I can count on, who want to do the right thing and stand up for morality, stand up for justice and good and humanity. And Father Brian is one of the heroes of that. So it's always an honor and a privilege to be on any place or in any stage with him.
And Father Brian, I know you have the utmost regard for Rabbi Eric and Rabbi Joe. Why is interfaith important to you rather than just focusing on your own? I know how connected you are to the rabbis.
Well, I would have to say I'm connected more to the community, to the Jewish community, because I really feel a rich debt theologically with the Jewish community, because that's our roots. As John Paul II, now saint, said that the Jewish community are our older brothers, and I'll make it more inclusive, older brothers and sisters. And I feel that when I am with a Jewish brother or sister, I'm being enriched with our tradition, with our theological essence. But when it comes to Rabbi Eric and Rabbi Joe and Rabbi Schneier and so many others, and Rabbi Skorka, the good friend of Pope Francis, that we have men who shine forth the light of God. They are following the rich tradition of Isaiah and Ezekiel and Jeremiah, and I admire so much their ministry. And Rabbi Joe and Rabbi Eric, you can't avoid in New York, because they are at everything where the community is needed. They're at every meeting. They love the people, not just of their own perhaps religious community, synagogue or center, but the whole community of New York. And they're always there, and they never tire. And I respect both of them so very much.
And I'm so very grateful to have you support my show. I'm just moving along fast, so we only have a few minutes left. Rabbi Eric, talk a bit about your new baby, Synagogue Connect. So just share a bit about that, because I think that's an awesome project you took on.
Well, thanks. I'll just do a quick, because we'll be able to do this more as the high holidays come up. But it's a worldwide project. I don't know if you know about this, Brian, but there's basically the two founding rabbis, Rabbi Charles Klein and Rabbi Ronald Brown. they decided to try to start a project that would provide information to college students and post-college students. If they find themselves in a new city, they just graduated, they don't know anybody, they don't have a synagogue, to have a data and be able to easily find a synagogue, by the way, of any denomination they can choose, of the several in the Jewish community, Orthodox, Reformed, Conservative, whatever they're looking for. So they started this a couple of years ago, and particularly we're starting with the high holidays, which is, you know, certainly an important part of the Jewish year. Some would say the most important part. A couple of years later, today, we have more than 1,000 synagogues have signed up or affiliated with Synagogue Connect, and of course it's synagogueconnect.org, and we've expanded it to folks who are even a little younger than graduate students. The next step is high school students if they want. And we have synagogues signed up from around the world, and we've partnered with the a group called Kahal, which is in Europe. And if you are a Jewish student in London or Paris or wherever, and you are looking for a synagogue to partner up with, to attend services and find a community, you go to Synagogue Connect and you'll find one. So,
and it's my understanding that you don't charge for any tickets for the High Holy Day.
Right, right. So
you're welcome
to
come in free.
Correct. So these more than 1,000 synagogues have agreed. You know, the High Holiday seats is the main way. You know, paying for them, charging for them, is one of the main ways synagogues are able to raise money to stay in business. And as you know, Father. It takes money to stay in business these days.
Absolutely.
And to keep our doors open, so to keep the air conditioner and the lights and the boiler running. So that's one of the main ways that synagogues are able to do that. It's the another version of passing around the plate, I guess. But for this purpose, they are agreeing to waive any ticket charge and let these young people come in. So as we get closer to the high holidays, Joyce, we could talk more about it. We were gonna,
absolutely.
Yeah. So thank you.
So folks, that's synagogueconnect.org.
Correct.
I think it's awesome in what it offers. So you just click on that and you'll be able to locate one near you. I never have either of you on the show without ending asking you for your message and a prayer. So, Father Brian, what is your message to our listening audience?
Okay, I would like to give a message to Eric first and to you, Joyce. Eric brought up something which is very close to my heart, and that is our young people and the passing on of religious tradition. Perhaps, Eric, you and I can spend some time with Joyce, not in the too distant future, and discuss about the relationship of young people with religion.
Absolutely. That would be great.
That would be something I would like to do with you and with Joyce.
I would love to.
Great, Brian.
Too.
Thank you. Yep.
And let me just close with a prayer for all of you.
Wait 1 second, Brian. What is your message to our listeners worldwide? What message during these high holy days would you give them? And then I'd love to hear your personal prayer.
Okay. My message would be to be faithful to your tradition. If you have been lax in terms of your observance of the faith to which you belong, maybe make this new springtime, this time of great growth, be a part of your conscience, and maybe become a better Jew, a better Catholic, a better Christian, a better Muslim, because a better religious person makes the world better.
Thank you for that.
Beautiful.
And what is your prayer?
Heavenly Father, we thank you for the blessings of this holy season, a season most precious as we recall the deliverance of your people from Egypt, as we recall your deliverance of all of us from the pain of death. Help us, encourage us, strengthen us, that we might be better people for all of our brothers and sisters and might be more powerful advocates for our creation, which is of your making. Amen.
Amen.
Amen. Thank you so much for that. Thank you for giving us this day to be with us. I am really, really grateful on behalf of my listeners. We're very, very appreciative. Rabbi Harris, what is your message for our folks?
Well, on this year, when Good Friday and Passover begin on the same day, we Jews are preparing to symbolically go forth from Egypt, and of course, in 50 days from now, to celebrate the receiving of the Torah, of God's commandments, at Mount Sinai. At the same time today, Christians are preparing for Easter and the good news of the resurrection. So let us appreciate the saving grace in both of our faith traditions, because we're both blessed and by God in ways that we not yet can fully fathom.
Wonderful. Thank you for that. And what is your prayer?
My prayer, may the Almighty help us forge an alliance of all believers to preserve the true image of God as cosmic Savior in a time when this image is being desecrated around the world by some Christians, Jews, Muslims, and others. We will stand forth and stand up.
Amen. So again, thank you so much. And my message to all of you folks is have a really happy, healthy, wonderful, and blessed holiday, whatever your faith. We invite you to do random acts of kindness. Pay it forward. Pay it backwards. Make someone happy today. Go out of your way to do the right thing, to do the good thing, so we can all make for a better world, one person and one positive action at a time. We also invite you to join us in song and in dance, and you can do that right now and laugh along with us as well. Thank you so much for sharing this awesome holiday with us, and may you be blessed and just enjoy the holidays in really good health and prosperity. Thank you.
All right. Happy Easter, Brian.
Same to you, Eric. Merry Christmas.
I was listening to Blog Talk Radio when my ears heard something that I did know. From the speakers of my laptop, I heard a voice. It was the White Oprah, also known as Joyce.
He did the MASH.
The Joyce Barry MASH.
Joyce Barry MASH.
She is a coaching smash.
He did the MASH.
You'll catch on in a flash.
He did the MASH.
The Joyce Barry MASH. I felt so inspired by her show, and her poetry was just so good, you know. I want to listen to Joyce again and again, as Joyce would say, if not now, when?
He did the MASH.
The Joyce Barry MASH.
Joyce Barry MASH.
She is a coaching smash.
He did the MASH.
You'll catch on in a flash.
He did the MASH.
The Joyce Barry MASH.
Wow.
Joyce knows all about having fun.
Wow.
She's a home business wizard and she's just begun.
Wow.
She's
wow.
a coaching sensation for not just me or
wow.
you or her. It's for everyone.
Then you can MASH.
Do the Joyce Barry MASH.
Joyce Barry MASH.
She's a home business smash.
Then you can MASH.
You'll catch on in a flash.
Then you can MASH.
Do the Joyce Barry MASH.
Wow.
Have a fantastic day and listen to Joyce Barry and friends.